Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, where we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today it's episode 91. We're joined by UFC debuter. He just won his UFC debut. He's undefeated in the bantamweight division. Please welcome Peyton Talbot. How are you today, Peyton?
I am good. How are you today?
I'm good, brother. So thanks for coming on the show. I was looking at your style. I was looking at the division, and I do have to say that your style's pretty conducive to beating a lot of these dudes, and I'll tell you why from my opinions, from what I've seen. So I feel like you can fight technically, but also I feel like when you engage in a brawl, you're ready to have a dirty fight. And because of that, I feel like in this really stacked bantamweight division where they favor such a technical showdown, I feel like you would stand out, kind of how Chito Vera makes it into a dirty fight. I feel like you'll stand out with your style. And a lot of these guys don't want to be in dogfights. So I feel like you're going to win a lot of matches just off the fact that your style is conducive in the division for beating a technical fighter.
Yeah, I could see that. I think I pride myself with being really comfortable in the pocket and comfortable with being uncomfortable. So I am very technical, but it's not fun for me all the time to be technical. Sometimes my desire gets the better of me and I want to make every fight a phone booth fight.
Tell me about your UFC debut. Were you happy with your performance? Because after rewatching the fight, that first round kind of got stolen off you. And to be honest, I know that is UFC debut and there's fights like that constantly happen. But do you think that you can correct that particular part of your game for the next upcoming fights that you're going to have?
Yeah, I definitely think I can get better at it. Looking back, I was pretty disappointed that I got held for the whole first round. Unfortunately, I do feel like, you know, at the top level of the sport in UFC, I feel like everybody has the cardio and strength to just hold someone for 5 minutes straight. The problem was, I think that Nick gassed himself out in those 5 minutes and he gave like all of his strength up in that 5 minutes. So unfortunately, I don't feel like there was much I could do without doing something stupid and giving up my neck. But I mean, I can always make improvements with being more active on the ground and being more positionally sound. I don't know. I felt like I impressed a lot of people with getting a submission and, you know, doing something that was not expected of me. And I was hoping for a bonus, but I think that my opponent kind of stole it from us in the first round.
Yeah. So after looking at your Sherdog and Tapology, I see that you just knock everybody out. I rewatched some of your fights on the regional circuit. Your knockouts are pretty brutal, but when I saw you get the sub, I was surprised too. So how's your jiu-jitsu experience going? Who are your coaches and how did you improve from the regional circuit to now being in the UFC?
Well, I grew up wrestling, so I do have a little bit of a wrestling background. I just did it in high school and middle school. And honestly, I was forced to wrestle through my friends and, you know, the people that were giving me rides home from school in middle school. Like I was forced to go against my will. But now, present time, I'm coached by the same people I started with. And that's Rick Collup. Sinjin Smith has done a lot to help me out. And Oscar Ramirez, who are two other fighters. But we work jits every day. And we don't really do just jiu-jitsu. We do ground and pound. So we're always working our punches. And I'm not really a jiu-jitsu guy. And although I practice it and do it every day, I look at it like as my cardio and like running. It's just like something shitty that you have to do. And the one thing I do like about the ground game is just like getting people to the ground and like the flow of movement in terms of wrestling. But I'm not a fan of the butt scooting and the grappling from the knees. Like I'll train it every day so that I don't have to do it in my fights. And I feel confident. Like I think a lot of the times it's not the person that is better at jiu-jitsu. I think, you know, me and Nick were pretty close skill-wise, but I think that he was just the aggressor and the initiator. And unfortunately in MMA, like if you're the initiator, you can control a fight for a round with a body triangle.
Yeah, bro, I hear you. Sorry about that. I just got a phone call. People are fucking calling me while I'm in here. So, can you, did you hear that? Sorry, bro.
Just a little bit, yeah. I just heard the ring.
So, Peyton, can you tell me, seeing that you've improved that one aspect of your game that was sort of lacking, how do you get out of your shell as a fighter? And how do you try and get uncomfortable to improve in life as well as being a fighter?
I think it's just going to come from me leaning into supplemental forms of training. And examples of that could be gymnastics. If you look at my social media, you've probably seen that I do pole dancing in terms of like working out, not performative yet.
I was going to ask you about that. Are you going to do that as like a career path?
Like if I were to live in Vegas and I needed some extra cash and wanted to like work out while I was doing it, I'd be totally fine with pole dancing.
But think about it, bro. Like, if you're a fighter and you get a whole bunch of bonuses and you just knock all these guys out, do you think you really need to do that?
No, but I'm a big side quest guy, and like I want to complete all of life's like little side quests, and that could be one that I could be into, but I mean, I'm not like set on it. I just think it would be a. Sorry about that. She's a monster. I just think that it would be cool to do. But I just think, yeah, maybe with pole dancing, some gymnastics stuff. I mean, even skateboarding helps me to the extent of not getting injured. And I think just throughout my career, giving way to things like that and like diversifying my training through. But I
Wait,
think
hold
that
on. Do
helps
you
out.
have two glasses? What the fuck? You have two glasses on at the same time?
Oh no, I just had to. It's just the top layer. I just had to shed it.
No, I'm saying glasses. I'm saying, do you have two sunglasses on at the same time? Two pairs of sunglasses?
No, I just have one pair on.
Yeah, what about the one that you just had? Did you swap them while I wasn't looking, or did you have two on at the same time?
No, I just have one pair of glasses on.
What about
What
the
do you
one that
mean?
you put on the desk?
Huh?
What about the thick ones on the desk? Do you know what I'm saying? I thought you had two sunglasses on at the same time.
No, I just had. Do you want me to take
Are
them
you
off?
sure? No, it's fine. I'm saying like I thought you had one pair and then you had another pair on top.
Oh no, maybe the video glitched or something.
Bro, are you playing with me? Are you pranking me right now?
Love
Yeah, I know, I know,
it.
I know, I
I'm just fucking
know. Mate, you're a fucking character. Dude, you're gonna be big in the UFC if you let people see the side of you.
I'm gonna try as best as I can, but yeah, I've always liked messing with people and just getting a little rise out of them.
So basically, you were talking about the side quests that you do. One of the topic points that I have on the list here is that I was going to ask you how eventful is your life? Because after checking your socials out, you look like one of the most how can I say, somebody that has the most amount of events that could possibly take place in their life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you should see my friends if you think my life is eventful. I think just the crowd of people I hang around with is, we all kind of have that quality. But yeah, I think, I mean, I've said this before, but I think a lot of UFC fighters get lost in like the mundanity of training every day and keeping their nutrition on point. And I mean, that does a lot to like make sure you show up and you're healthy, but I think mentally it really stifles you when you get used to a pattern like that. So I just try to diversify my time through a lot of things, and you only get one life, and I would really regret if I just pigeonholed it into an MMA career and just building my whole life around that. Like I just have so many other things and hobbies and so other aspirations that I want to finish before I die. And I could die tomorrow, so yeah, I mean, and even what I show on my Instagram isn't even, I have so many things that I don't choose to share with the public. So, I'm glad that that's what you get from it, though, because it is an accurate representation.
So, how long have you been skateboarding for and also doing the pole dancing? And do you think that these forms of activities that are like helping you with your balance and strength training, do you think that you can port that over to MMA in any capacity?
Well, I started skating before, like right before COVID. So I'm kind of new to it, but I grew up around skate culture, so I've always kind of known about it. And then for pole dancing, I didn't really start until like I'd say like 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. So it's still pretty fresh, and I don't do it like often. It's just like my sister owns a studio here in Reno, so whenever I do get a chance to go take a class, I will. But I think they all translate. Like when you're cooking in a bowl and you're skating, like going 20 miles an hour, there's a constant fear of like falling or injuring yourself. And when you can train yourself to be okay with that and just continue to do something scared and, you know, try to get the next trick or try to do it and look comfortable doing it, you know, when you're trying to get a clip, I think that translates to just articulating your body while you're uncomfortable. And that's all fighting is. Like, you're never comfortable in the cage, and you're never, unless you're me. But most of the time, you're not very comfortable in there, and there's a lot of anxiety and fear. And if you can learn how to move your body in an appealing way while it's uncomfortable, I think that that translates more than anything, more than having a good diet and going to bed at 9 p.m. every night.
Tricky.
After looking at your matches and your fights, the thing that really came out of the conclusion I came to was that you are very comfortable in there. You seem like you don't really care about the conjecture and all the rest of what people are saying or the crowd or anything around you, like the refs or your opponent. It doesn't really faze you. So have you always been this way? And is this something that you really pride yourself on?
Yeah, I think growing up, I was always a big people pleaser, and I was very concerned about what other people think or thought of me because I moved around a lot and I had to like make new friends all the time. But as I grew up, you know, you kind of become what you desire to be, and that was just to not care about what other people thought of me. And I think like I do MMA because I enjoy it, and I just have always been like very keen on the fact that like I don't do this for the fans. I don't care what the fans want. Like I fight the way that I want to fight, and it just so happens that people really enjoy the way that I fight and they really enjoy watching me, and I make it exciting for them. But it's not because of that. It's because I enjoy watching it back. I enjoy being in those moments. And like if you see my Instagram, there's I catch some hate for like being kind of a zesty guy and a little bit fruity, but those kinds of things don't really faze me. Like I don't care. Like I'm just living to be like as true to myself as possible. And you see it a lot in fighting, but I mean you'll see it if you look at my Instagram. People could roast me all day on shit that I do, but to me, what's more important than indifference is hate or love. Like I would rather be hated by like 90% of people than for everyone to just feel very indifferent about me. So.
I rate that take. I'm going to ask you about something that's genetic to you. So, your chin, bro, you take damage, but for some reason, you don't really give a fuck. Like, it doesn't faze you. So, why is your chin so good? And how do you improve chin? Do you just constantly keep getting punched in the mouth? And then after a while, you just say, you know what? I'm okay.
I don't know. I think one of my things that nobody really knows about me that is extremely underrated is that I've never met anyone that can take a beating like I can. Like I've never met anyone that can just get hit as hard as me and just like keep walking. So I think a little bit was that was instilled in me. I don't know when or where I got that from, but honestly, it looks like I get a lot like hit a lot harder than I do because of my hair. Like I really don't get hit that hard. And you see in the fights, like my face isn't damaged at all. I don't have really any significant bruising. Some of that is genetic, and I think that I do have really good genetics in terms of, you know, being being a bit of a mutt. Like I'm Irish, white, American Indian, and black. So I kind of hit the lottery in terms of genetic diversity. But I always make sure to roll with the punches. So when you see my hair like getting snapped super hard, that's also me like taking the momentum away from the punch. And I do these things like subconsciously all the time. So I think a lot of it is that, but I think more than anything, it's mentality. And if you go into the cage like very anxious and uncomfortable, and like mentally you're uncomfortable, your brain is going to look for a quick way out because it already feels like it's in danger. Versus I think you'll see when I'm in the cage, I'm very comfortable and like I'm just very present in that moment and relaxed. And because my brain feels so relaxed, it doesn't feel a need to just like shut off after a big hit. And I've been hit like extremely hard before. Like if anybody goes and looks at my Billy Brand fight, I was like 2-0 as a pro. That is like the hardest I've ever been hit in my life. And he actually broke his hand on my face. And he says that that's the hardest he's ever hit anyone. Like my chin was looking over my back shoulder. Like if you pause the video, I was like looking behind me and it did nothing. Like I was fine. I threw like immediately after. So I think a lot of that is mentality, but I do have good genes to go with it. And I have a nice jawline. So
we were talking about that Billy fight. Can you tell me what he hit you with and how that felt to you? Did you feel anything, or did you know that that was a really hard shot, but you're just built different and you refuse to quit?
It definitely stung. Like he hit me and I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah, I felt my like neck detached from my, like my vertebrae. I felt one of my vertebrae like detached and like my neck just went like completely out of alignment. But I do think like, I don't know. I think in that fight, like mentally I knew he was going to hit hard and I was kind of hurt in that moment, but not showing that and like throwing a combo right after, I think it paid dividends for me later on in the fight, because I don't think like if you had to like ask him how bad he hurt me, I don't think he really knew until I told him later on, because we're homies now. We're super close. But.
So do you train with him every so often?
Yeah, I cross train. I go down to Alpha Male every once in a while, and I train with him and then one of my other past opponents, Hector. And I get really good rounds with them, and we know each other super well, so we can kind of push each other in ways that we already know our weaknesses, where our weaknesses are. But like we're homies too. He's come up to Reno and got a couple rounds with me here, and we're very similar, me and that guy.
Do you spar hard all the time? Because from what the clips are showing me, your sparring rounds look extremely violent.
Yeah, I'm too smart, man. I got way too many brains and I need to like dumb myself down a little bit. So no, I'm just kidding. I don't spar hard all the time, but I definitely was brought up that way. Like when I was early on, when I was an amateur, I like sparred pretty hard, like at least 2-3 times a week. Like I went at it with this guy like every day. But I, you know, that stuff is healthy for like instilling toughness and like why I'm so comfortable in the pocket, because I literally sparred hard every day for like 2 years. So, but like, I'm not at that point in my career anymore. So, I'll spar hard like one day a week or one day every 2 weeks, like if that, and I'm a big, like listen to my body guy and I go based off of that. And I can kind of tune in, like if I'm starting to get headaches, I'll cool it for a while, but, I look like I'm sparring harder than I actually am. Like you can ask any one of my training partners. I actually punch like very softly. And I pull them like right at the end. That's like a precision thing. But some of my teammates don't know how to do that as well. So yeah, I spar hard probably like once a week, once every 2 weeks. And it's because I want to. I don't go to the gym and I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta spar hard today. Like, if anything, it's like I have to fight the urge to spar hard all the time because I love doing that. I love like getting in those deep waters with people.
So I'm going to ask you about this most recent upcoming main event, which is Armen Tsayukian versus Beneil Dariush. So this is Dariush's first main event, and this will be Armen's second. It's a great match, dude. It's a turning of the tide match, and I feel like they're setting up Armen to get the victory. Now, I'm going to ask you about the matchup itself, but from what I'm looking at, Armen has underrated striking. He's younger. He wants to win a little bit more than probably Beneil, who's been around for a while. Beneil has been knocked out multiple times, took a lot of damage. He got flying kneed by Edson. He got punched by Hernandez, finished in like a minute, and he got head kicked by Charles Oliveira. So I don't think the health is on his side. Armin's only improving. He's still very young. He wants that rematch with Islam, so he's going to be really motivated to get in here. I think from a stylistic point of view, the wrestling might cancel each other out because they're very good grapplers. But when you're talking about the striking, Beneil's defense isn't there, whilst Armin's Muay Thai combos and his distance control, like when he does those switch kicks and when he's boxing, dude, I think this is Armin's fight to win and to finish around round four, around there.
Is this Arnold Allen, the guy that fought Max Holloway?
No, bro. Armen Tsayukian. Do you know who that is?
I don't
You're
really know
kidding
much
me.
about
You're
fighting.
kidding me.
I don't.
Why is it all the fighters that I get on this show, they don't even know the fights, dude? The fight is this Saturday for you, Sunday for me. It's this Saturday. How do you not know who's in the main event?
Dude, I don't really watch like UFC like that. I watch my favorite guys. I do know Beneil Dariush though, and I've seen him fight like often, so I can speak on him. He's tough and he's got things that he's good at, but to me he just moves like extremely slow and like
He's very awkward.
he is very awkward, and I think he uses that to his advantage sometimes, but with somebody like Oliveira, like who's athletic and has like that killer instinct, somebody like Dariush, like he's gonna struggle with that. I don't know. I watch his hand speed and he hits hard, but he is very slow and he telegraphs super hard. And yeah.
The best way I can put it is that think about Beneil, right? He's really slow and awkward. And think about Makhachev. You know Islam Makhachev at least. Come on, you know Islam
I do.
Makhachev.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, before the Volkanovski fight, which was really close, his debut in the UFC, Armen Tsayukian's debut in the UFC, was against Makhachev. That was his first fight in the whole promotion. Now, you debuted against, I don't know, I forgot the dude's name. What's the dude's name again?
Nick
Your
Aguirre.
debut. Yeah. You debuted against that guy. Armen was literally debuting up against a young Islam Makhachev. That's just a ridiculous fight to come into the UFC. And that was Islam's closest fight until he fought Volkanovski for the first time. So that would mean that a 22-year-old Armen Tsayukian gave Makhachev his hardest match. And now that Armen is like 26, 27, now he's getting into his prime. So, dude, this is Armen's title run, and it's his fight to take, basically.
Yeah, with that information, I would go with Arnold. I don't know what's his specialty. Is he a grappler, striker?
Bro, he's a full package, man. He grapples really well. He's got good wrestling. He's got good jiu-jitsu. But dude, his combos and his Muay Thai is like it's another level. I would say he's more of a grappler, but the fact that he has like a if he has like a 7 or an 8 in striking, he definitely has like a 9 out of 10 in his grappling. So the guy's a fucking beast. Moving on, let's talk about Reno Academy of Combat. Let's talk about this team. When did you start here? And are you still working with the guys? How'd they help you?
Yeah. So I started there about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, like six and a half. And I've been with them ever since. I've like dabbled around the area with some other gyms, especially when I was starting, but no place was quite like the gym that I train at now in terms of toughness and just like we're a very old school gym. So And at the time when I came in, there were two pro fighters that were like semi-active. But what's crazy is that when I came into the gym, one of those pro fighters had his last fight, and the gym was going like a very commercial route. And I don't say this to like pat myself in the back, like me and my coach talk about this all the time, but I think I kind of saved the gym's fight team in a way. Because for a long time I was the only one fighting out of our gym. And for a while there was a time that I like didn't really have many training partners, or hardly anyone to go with to train for fights. So, since then, and since I've like had a successful pro career, we've brought in like quite a few people, and we have like an up and coming team that's very young. But I mean, I still get pushed every day depending on who's there. I don't know. I think all of that is like, you can have the best training partners ever, but what's going to take you to victory is what is inside of you.
Why don't you watch UFC fights?
Because a lot of fighters suck. Like, a lot of people are not fun to watch. Like,
I totally agree with you. I've been saying that for a while now, and people get angry at me. So it's actually hilarious that the second a fighter says it, no one gives a shit. But the second I say it, it's bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, and like, I guess I have credibility, but like, a lot of fighters just aren't fun to watch. It's like, I don't know. There's the option in MMA to be extremely boring and hold on to somebody. And the fact that like that prevents you from taking like significant damage, like a lot of people are going to do that. So, I watch guys that are my favorite, but honestly, like I would watch more, but I try to stay like extremely busy with like my hobbies, or hanging out with my girlfriend or just like doing shit. So a lot of the reason why I don't watch is just because I would rather fill my time with something else. It's like very entertaining.
Which discipline do you think is the most needed in a street fight? How would you fucking destroy someone in the street?
That's the thing, man. It's wrestling.
You're joking. No, wrestling. Dude. You're bullshitting me. 100% you're bullshitting me.
No, I'm not. Because...
how?
Like, as much as I hate wrestling, the reason I hate wrestling is because it, like, trumps all. Like, you could be the most fun fighter to watch, like, throw all kinds of spinning heel kicks. You could be fucking Edson Barboza, but you put him against Khabib, and he's going to look like a bitch. Like, he's going to have no idea what to do. And
what if it's a 2v1?
Huh?
What if it's a 2v1? Wouldn't you need Muay Thai or boxing?
Like if it's two Muay Thai guys against a wrestler?
Nah, well, if that's the case on the street, what would happen?
The wrestler would get fucked up. If it was two Muay Thai totally. Guys. Yeah.
But via 1v1, you're saying that wrestling would be able, you'd be able to protect yourself the best.
I think so. Yeah, I think because the thing about street fights is that they people always get tied up. Like you're never gonna see a clean. Like nobody manages distance well on the street. Eventually,
yeah, you're always in a clinch exchange.
Yeah, and if you have somebody that like knows how to get somebody to the ground painfully, and you're on top of concrete, like that's a dub. Like you're knocking that dude out without having to throw a punch. I like one of my teammates almost killed someone because he suplexed him in a street fight. I'm not going to say who, but he suplexed him and he was out cold for a long time.
Was it concrete? Where was it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was concrete. It was just like asphalt. And he was freaking out. Like he thought that he killed someone and that he was going to jail, but the dude ended up waking up and everything was fine. There's a lot of alcohol flowing, so a lot was forgiven. But you throw somebody on the back of their head on concrete, like that's like a car crash. Like,
when did you realize that you were going to fight professionally?
That's an interesting question because when I started doing MMA, it was because I enjoyed it. I never had a goal of like being the best or being in the UFC. But the weird thing is that throughout my whole career, like even when I first started, like I always had the feeling that Like, if I really wanted to, I could be extremely successful in this sport. And throughout my whole life, I've dealt with this feeling that I've lived through everything already. And I feel like at times my actions aren't even my own. So I have had this over feeling or this overarching feeling throughout my life. Like every time I do something or every time I get a huge win or I do make the decision to go pro, it feels like I've already done it before. And that might be why you see me in there when I get my hand raised. I'm not that excited because everything just feels very familiar to me. And I'm not sure where that comes from. I have my theories, but.
What are your theories? You can share them here. This is an open platform. Do you think you've had a previous life?
I don't know about a previous life, but I feel like I'm just a pawn. Like I feel, you know, people look at very creative people and I am a very creative person and they think that, oh man, that person is so creative. Look at how free they are. But
their ideas have come from the muse. They keep saying that their ideas have come from something that they tapped into, not from their own volition.
Exactly. And I will forever be enslaved by my aspirations and hobbies. Like that's money because like creative people are they're slaves to themselves. They're slaves to their craft, like to their outlet. And for me, I feel like I am enslaved to this higher power that pushes me to do things. And there's been times where I've had to make like really hard life decisions that I have not wanted to do at all and that have really hurt people and that I'm like, why the fuck do I have to do this? But it comes from this feeling of like, I don't have a choice. Like this is the right decision. And like, if you want to live your life the way that you desire to live it, you have to do this. And that's caused me to do some very crazy things in life. And I don't know. It's like, I think my greatest fear is spiders. And I think it
fucking
is
hate spiders.
Yeah. Not like big hairy spiders. I can't even look at them. I can't see pictures of them. It feels like my brain is on fire. And like even talking about them gives me the chills. But what is cool about spiders is that they're like mythically seen as creators. Like people say that language came from spiders because they wove the first like symmetrical shape into a web. And the fact that like my worst fear is a spider and I have nightmares and visions of them while I sleep all the time. Stop it, Turkey. The fact that that is the thing. I feel like there's this giant spider somewhere like controlling me and like weaving its web. And I'm bouncing on this web and I'm walking on this web. And like, you know, there's like different paths and there's little things that I have say over, but at the end of the day, I'm in the fucking spider's web and I'm stuck to it. And I'm not getting out. I don't know where that spider is. And I hope that I never like have to confront it ever because that is my worst fear. And I would rather die than like have to fight a spider, like a giant spider. But yeah, that's where it comes from. I've always had this like this loneliness from the fact that I feel like I'm on this path that I don't even fully understand. But yeah.
Do you think that big spider is like an analogy for something controlling you, or are you just talking shit?
No, I'm not really talking shit. Like,
you don't think there's a big, you do know that would be schizophrenic to believe that there's a big spider mind controlling you.
Yeah, but I mean, schizos can be right about things. I don't know. Like,
of course. Yeah. But you don't genuinely think that there's a spider controlling you.
Not in this realm. No.
Drop the character for a second. What do you think is actually controlling you? Do you have free will?
No, I don't think I do. I think if
you
anything
genuinely believe that.
No, I think people do have free will, but I don't think I do. I think that if something is controlling me, it's probably my future self. And I feel like I have this weird connection to you know, time not being linear. And I've had this weird feeling throughout my life and I've had some strange experiences, coming like extremely close to death at a young age. And Yeah, I don't know. If anything, it's my future self and like what I desire myself to be when I'm laying on my deathbed.
When did you realize that this was happening?
Probably when I turned 18 and I was in my like darkest place before I like found MMA. I was just like in a very dark, like just like very hellish mental place. And that was kind of like what saved me and what brought me back to reality.
I'm trying to figure out what to ask you about this. You're not pulling my leg, are you? I know that you're a jokester.
No, I'm not. I'm not pulling your leg at all. If anything, I'm like sugarcoating it because I don't know.
What? Do you feel like, here's the thing, right? Because I'm pretty understanding, you can tell me anything. It doesn't really matter, right? So do you feel like if you were to go more in depth about it, do you think people won't take it seriously?
Totally. And I don't think the way that I can describe it will give it justice. Like,
so we've gone in depth about this belief system that you have. So can you tell me about this near-death experience that you had at a young age? Do you feel comfortable to talk about that?
Yeah. So when I was, I think I was like 8 years old, I was at a birthday party with one of my friends. I lived in South Carolina at the time, and my friend had like a huge property on a farm. So they had this like man-made pond in the middle of their property. And we were, one of his like family members was, they had some kind of tractor, like a lift. And they were lifting us up super high over the pond, and we would all start on the lift in the water. And then we would jump off, and like the last person to jump off won because it would be super high. So eventually I jumped off, and my curiosity got the best of me, and I swam over to the opposite side of the pond where nobody was, because there were a bunch of lily pads over there. So I swam over there, and I'm swimming through the lily pads, and as I start to like get into where it's like they're like covered in lily pads, my arms are getting tangled. And I didn't know this, but like lily pads are usually attached to the bottom of the lake with like their stems. And it's like a very viney like stem. So as I was swimming, I've never been the best swimmer. Like I also have like kind of a fear of water because I've had a lot of like near drowning experiences. But as I was swimming and I was looping my hands to paddle, they were getting tangled more and more in the lily pads. And before I knew it, I was completely underwater with my arms and legs like tangled up in these lily pads, and I could not get out. And, the side of the pond that I was on, like nobody could really see me, and like everybody in the party was like kind of doing their own thing. So, I'm underwater and like, I start to like, I'm under there for a while, and I start to feel like I'm losing feeling in my legs, and like I'm about to like go unconscious. And I remember having the thought, like while I was underwater, just like, fuck, this sucks. I'm like 8 years old and I'm gonna die. Like I haven't done anything in life. I haven't experienced anything. Like I had this like, it was in, you know, a fraction of a second, but I had this thought of like, fuck, dude, I'm 8 and I'm about to die. Like I screwed my life up. I had one life and I fucked it up. And as I was like about to go out and fade out of consciousness, I felt a hand grab my back and somebody yanked me out of the water and pulled me up onto the shore or like the edge of the pond. And I was like super out of it, like trying to like get some oxygen and like cough up all the water. And the guy just like asked if I was okay. And I just like nodded. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm okay. And then,
How did he get to you?
I don't know. That's the thing. This is what I just have trouble with this whole experience is, I don't know who it was. I was underwater, so I didn't see anybody coming. And after I came to, like, my memory is very blurry around this. And I'm, like, you know, like, coughing up water and, like, kind of throwing up. And I, like, went to go walk back to where everybody was on the other side of the pond, and I was telling people about it, and nobody believed me. Like, nobody saw it happen. And I didn't even recognize the dude that pulled me out of the water. I didn't even get a good look at him because I was so like worried about breathing air. Yeah, I mean, I told my parents and they weren't there, but they were like, oh, that's crazy. But, I was alone in that experience.
They didn't believe you?
No, they believed me, but it's like, you're an 8-year-old, like telling a story of where you almost drowned. It's like, oh yeah, I'm sure you almost drowned. Like, it probably wasn't that serious. But I mean, I was extremely alone in that experience. Like, nobody witnessed it. I don't know who that guy was.
And I've got because, a serious like, question for you. So you brought up to me about your future self. Are you concerned that maybe that would have been you that pulled you out of the water?
I don't know. Like,
has it crossed your mind?
Yeah. It's crossed my mind. Like, we think about time travel and, you know, divine, like guardian angels and spirits. And it's definitely crossed my mind and it seems like a very cool thought. But yeah, I don't know. I think that if I did have access to like a time machine, I would be doing other things than just saving my 8-year-old self. It would probably get the better of me in another way. But
how often do you think about this?
Not super often anymore, but I do feel like if I'm questioning like a big life decision or like if I'm a little uncomfortable about doing something, I think about that and I think about the people I've witnessed that have died. And it like, you know, when you're close to death, it makes you probably make the right decision and push yourself out into doing something very uncomfortable that you'll be happy about later on when you're dead.
Is that all with that story? Is there anything else?
That's pretty much it. Since then, I don't really enjoy being out in the open water if it's not salt water, because I feel like I sink very fast and I have some dense bones and not a lot of fat. So that's pretty much it. But I mean, with that happening to me at a very young age, I think it instilled like a deep hunger for life and a deep hunger for experience and to like exhaust everything in life before I die, because I was extremely close to it in that moment. There was almost no Peyton Talbot.
Do you want to move on to MMA now?
Yeah.
So let me ask you, I already told you why I think that you can get rid of some of these bantamweights. You're still young, dude. I think the best plan of attack, this is my opinion, this is how I've seen the Russians space out their career and how they've done extremely well as a viewer, it's usually the best to fight infrequently, keep training frequently, but fight infrequently when you're young, especially when you're in the UFC, to take fights that are of a lesser competition until you get to those ranking spots where you can't avoid having these really hard fights. I would say having a 25-year-old at, you're 25, right?
Yep.
At bantamweight and fighting 26, once or twice, 27, once, do it just how Leon Edwards did it, or how these Russians do it. And when you fight one time a year whilst training the entirety of the year, you have a fight where you put everything into one singular fight camp for an opponent, you destroy that opponent, and then you rinse and repeat until you get into your prime where you can consistently fight longer. This basically negates the amount of injuries you're going to have. And usually from what I've seen with this trend that I'm talking to you about, it's usually the champions that do this that end up getting the belt. So I don't know what your goals are for MMA, but that's just what the data's kind of saying, similar to how Islam and Khabib both got the belt.
Yeah.
Do you care about that?
The problem with me is that like I don't give a shit about having the belt, and I don't want to like act on my career based off of that end goal. And I mean, I'm 25, and like everybody says like you're 25 and you're only a quarter of your life, but it's actually not true, because relatively, like the year passes by quicker in relativity to like how, like your total age, you know, a year becomes a less amount of time with each coming year. So I feel like I'm halfway through my life and that just seems like a very slow process. And like, I'm not, you know, I'm not an MMA guy. I'm not going to be an MMA guy my whole life. And I want to like, you know, hit the gas pedal and get through this so I can do like a bunch of other things in life. And you know, not even nothing having to do with that is just the fact that like, I enjoy fighting and like, I want to do it. Like, I don't want to fight the easy guys to get to the belt. I want to fight like killers and just dudes that make me feel really scared. Like, I want to test myself and, you know, make sure I'm bulletproof mentally, like just so that I have peace and like inner peace for the rest of my life. And like, I don't know, it's not really up to me. I feel like they're kind of treating me like a cash cow and Dan is probably going to make me hit the gas pedal and he wants to market me and, you know, make the most out of my career, financially. So, you know, that's to say if I keep winning, but, I'm cool with fighting like 3 times a year max. Like, I don't want to fight more than that for sure. 2 would be cool, but definitely not 1. I feel like that's just, I don't do well in idleness.
What are your goals outside of fighting? Do you see yourself retiring quickly, like maybe when you're 31 or 32, to go on to do what ventures you want to complete?
Maybe retiring from fighting. I think I'll always train in a way because I love the sport, but I have like, I want to like open up like a clothing brand and I want to do things with clothes and kind of change the way people wear stuff. And I really love music, so I want to do something with that. I've like gotten into DJing recently. I love videography and editing videos, so I'd love to do something with that and maybe hopefully connect like all of those things in some form of like entertainment or like social service. And I'm like fascinated by psych research, so to be a part of some research thing that I'm very interested in or that I maybe lead someday would be very cool.
Who does your videos on your Instagram? I really like them.
I do.
How long have you been editing for?
Only like 2 years, like 2 or 3 years.
Let me ask you about how you think you're going to do in the bantamweight division, seeing that I gave you my take on why I think you'll find success. I want to hear your opinion on what I said at the very start, as well as the fact that what do you think you're going to get done from like an objective standpoint?
I think objectively, I'm going to get a lot of people to question themselves, especially my opponents. Like, I don't think I don't instill fear in my opponents. Like, I don't make them scared of me, but I feel like what is worse than that is I make them scared of themselves and I make them question themselves. So I don't know. My goals are just to like question a lot of the people in the division and like question why they're fighting and question their skills in deep water and to expose a lot of the people that are paper tigers and just look good on paper and have good records, but you know, don't have the ability to go in those deep waters and really be a fighter that loves it. I just hope that I can kind of change the way of that fighting is seen to people and the reason that people fight, like kind of how Conor McGregor did it. Like, I don't see myself doing it as big as him in that way, but he really changed the sport. Like guys like that. I just hope that I can maybe inspire people to fight from a different place and like really look at it as an enjoying, like communicative, intimate thing versus just like, I'm the baddest dude on the planet. I'm a blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I just hope that I can show people that through fighting, you can like get a very deep form of inner peace and like really understand other people as well as yourself.
So tell me about your time at the Dana White Contender Series. How did that come to fruition? When did you get the call after your performance? How did you feel getting it done?
I got the call right after my last A1 fight with Christian Rivas. And they didn't really tell me this, but I guess Sean Shelby was watching that fight because if I didn't beat that guy, he was going to be the next guy into the Contender Series through the UFC or into the UFC. But I ended up beating him, and I think Sean was a huge fan of me, and he might have even been watching me before that. But my manager doesn't really tell me these things because he doesn't like to get in my head in that way. It was really cool. I really liked the Contender Series experience. And I love how like different it is from everything else. Like, you don't have a walkout song. It's very like business oriented. I remember when I walked into the Apex, everyone was looking at me like this, like very serious. Like, they were like men in black workers. And that was like a very weird thing to experience, like walking into a cage, like, and fighting in front of these people. But it just goes to
show
that, like,
did you give a shit about what they were thinking?
No, not really. It was just like weird to see. Like, I'm not somebody that is like so out of it and like so angry and like I don't like notice people, but like I noticed like the looks that people were giving me, and it was just, I didn't really care, but it was just different. And good thing I'm like so comfortable with, you know, just like walking out through anything. I could walk through fire and like still fight my best fight, I feel like. So it didn't affect me, but I'm glad I did it, because like now I have a newfound appreciation for like routine and like the walkout song and like watching other people fight before you and like that whole thing.
Tell me about your tattoos. Who influenced the style surrounding them, and why do you get them?
I think most of my inspiration comes from anime, whether I like it or not. And I like simplicity, like black and white. I think those two things just, they, you know, like metaphorically and like physically, they're just like, nothing is like the contrast between black and white. So all of my tattoos are black and white. The dot in the center is like a hardcore anime reference, but for me, it just means like an internal void and like aloneness. And then nobody knows about this one, but I have a white ink tattoo. You can like barely see it. And it's actually a barcode that scans human. But it looks like a scar. You can like barely
see it. Where does it scan to?
It's just like a barcode is like all of these bars translate to a letter, and the letters consecutively just say H-U-M-A-N. But you have to have
a phone on it.
Oh, no, it has to be like a barcode, like a gun scanner that scans for the word. It has to like be in the system already. But the idea is that it just says human, and it's just like a play on that word.
Is remaining undefeated important for you?
Yeah, that's my ego talking. Like, it is, and I wish it wasn't. Like, I wish I just solely cared about like going in there and just putting on a good fight, which I do, but like, I don't know. I just think that like being undefeated is a very special thing, and only so many people get to have that right. So it's important to me, yeah.
What are you thinking before the cage door closes? You look very calm. We already brought it up beforehand, but what specifically in your previous fight were you thinking? Because you looked pretty chill.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not thinking anything. Like, my mind is completely empty. And I didn't know that that was a special thing, like being able to completely empty my mind until, you know, I've like learned other people can't really do that as easily as me. Some people can, but I'm not really thinking much. Like, I'm just, the most that I'm thinking is just like to stay present and just like have fun. Like, I know what I'm about to do is going to be extremely fun. So I'm just like eager. But my mind is like extremely quiet when I'm in there.
For someone that's never watched your fights, can you describe your style to them?
Yeah, I think my style is just like, I'm always on my front foot. I don't like to take any steps back, and I'm a very slow starter, and I get much better as the fight goes on. And I do like to play with my food a little bit. I don't like to rush a finish. I like to take my sweet time with it and make sure it's right in the moment. And yeah, I'm a phone booth fighter. I can fight anywhere, and I'm a rangy guy, and I love to use my range, but I use my range well so that people feel like they have to be close to me, and then I just eat them up.
If you couldn't fight MMA, what fighting organization or fight rule set would you fight in?
Taekwondo.
Why? Sure.
It's just so, it's very cool. Mainly like old school Taekwondo. The newer stuff is more like point based and like, I don't like it as much, but being able to like forms of capoeira where you can like rotate your body in the air and use your most longest, sharpest weapon, which is like your shin. I think that is like insanely cool. It's like wielding a sword that's attached to you, and the way that those guys spin and the amount of like whip that they get with some of their kicks, like I just wish that I could replicate some of it.
You told me that you don't watch a lot of the UFC. Are you gonna watch Sean O'Malley versus Chito Vera? Do you watch those fighters' fights?
Totally. I'm watching that one for sure. I've got a big target on Sean's back, so he's somebody that I watch. I haven't even seen all of his fights, but from now on, I'm gonna be watching that guy.
What do you think, from what you've seen so far, is his biggest weakness?
Sean's biggest weakness is when you can take away what he's good at. And for him, that's movement. Like, he does very little things with his feints and his movement and his directional change that really, like, screws up people's timing. And when you can take that away from him, you saw it in the first Chito fight, which, I mean, he didn't really lose that fight, and he says that, and fuck him for saying that, because it's a loss, but if you can compromise that peroneal nerve, like, and create drop foot, anybody's going to lose that fight, but Sean especially, like, he's not going to be able to shoot in and outdo you with his jiu-jitsu, so that's his one weakness, but I feel like Chito has much more to worry about, and I feel like Sean is most likely going to win this fight with Chito.
Who introduced you to MMA originally?
Conor McGregor, his YouTube highlights.
What was your favorite knockout?
That's a funny question. The Eddie Alvarez one is like iconic, but he has this one knockout. I don't even remember who it was against. But I don't remember who it was against, but the clip is like there's like a red velvet cage. Like that's how I remember this. But he like coils his body, like he throws a cross. And then like an uppercut, or it might be an uppercut to the body and then across, but the way his like body moves is like so aggressive and just violent. It looks like a cobra like striking, and you don't really see McGregor move like that. Like the video I'm talking about, that's probably my favorite knockout of his, because it's just like so violent.
Was that in the UFC or was that like Cage Warriors?
No, I think it was like Cage Warriors, or it might have been one before that, because I don't think Cage Warriors has a red floor in their cage. But
are bantamweights the best fighters in MMA right now?
I think technically, yeah. Technically, bantamweights are the best just because of how, you know, the body works in relativity to its size. If 135ers were like, if they weren't 135, they'd be doing other sports. Like they're some of the most athletic fighters, but the fact that we don't have size on our team is like, that's the reason that we're not like NFL players and we're not basketball players. Like, I don't know. I was extremely good at football, but as soon as size became a factor, I couldn't keep up. And then, I mean, I would say like, it's hard to decide between that and 145. But I think with 145ers, like they have more muscle than what like the body can handle in terms of trauma. So you see some like crazy wild knockouts just because like us 135ers don't hit super hard and like our necks can take the impact. But because of like some of this displacement in people's body types at 145, like you look at Chad Mendes and you see his traps, like it's just like so disproportionate to the rest of his body. And that's because at 145, they have more room for muscle to like unevenly distribute throughout their body. So I think because of that,
sorry to interrupt. One fighter that really shows this is Josh Emmett. He's like a fucking tank, and all of his knockouts are just ridiculous. It looks like a lightweight punching a bantamweight instead of a featherweight fighter.
Yeah, he's a great example of that. I actually had lunch with him. He's a super cool dude, very humble and like quiet guy.
But yeah, like the way he's built, like, you know what he's going to try to do to you when you're fighting him.
So you had lunch with Josh. He's a team alpha male guy, I believe. So was that when you were at that gym? And also, how'd you even get involved with that gym?
I made a day. I usually make a day out of it when I go there. And he just happened to be free for lunch with another guy that I'm friends with. So I just went with him. But the reason I got in contact with that was because I fought for Uriah Faber's promotion earlier on in my pro career. And he really took a liking to me because we have a lot of similarities. So he was super generous and I was his belt holder for 3 fights. Somebody else just won the title, but he was like, anytime you want to come train, like hit me up. You should definitely come because he wants his fighters to go with me and like test themselves as well as he wants me to be better. And he wants to see the best for me. But my manager also works with Uriah, and one of my managers, his name is Dave Hirschbein, but he works with Alpha Male and MMA Gold, who I train with both.
The BMF title, I do have to say I enjoy it, and I know a lot of people get annoyed, especially the purists of MMA. They don't like it, but I have to say, even though I am a purist, I like the format of it, what it means. So I would say that having that title every 4 to 5 years being contended for, not every year, every 5 years to make a really big event out of it. And when that person that has the BMF retires, they put it up for grabs again. I think that's the best way to do it. We just saw it with Masvidal. He left. He was supposed to do another match with it. He retired immediately. They put it up for grabs. I think doing it like that is just a fun sandbox type WWE thing that the UFC can do. And who cares? It's not a real title. We know it's not a real title. And it's just a fun thing to, make a fight more important.
Yeah, I agree. Is there a rule on it now? Like, is it up for grabs at any point? Or is that the rule? Like, they have to retire it?
Dana White does whatever is convenient for him. So there's no certainty in life, as you know. And if Dana thinks that Connor needs to fight at UFC 300, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right? Because they haven't confirmed a single fight for UFC 300, then it will be convenient to hold McGregor off, even though McGregor is saying himself that he's ready to fight this month, the month beforehand, the month before that. But instead, they'll hold him off until April or May because it's convenient for the UFC. So how I see it is Dana White will, if the BMF will be on 3 times in a year, if it's convenient for him, he'll do that. If it's available once every 5 years, if it's convenient, he'll do it. So to be honest, there's no rule about it. It's just more what your opinion is.
Yeah. I like that. It would really bug me if like somebody won the BMF title and they didn't retire for a while and they kind of like lost their skill and were just like, you know, kind of the way Anderson Silva did it. No hate to him, but if he were to have the BMF title and go out the way he did, like that would be really frustrating to watch for, you know, for somebody that's like a Shavkat fan. Like that guy should be fighting for the BMF title. If he continues to win and do well, I think he's a bad motherfucker, but.
Do you think that legends of the sport that stay around for a little bit too long, do you think that they should gracefully exit? Similar to how even a Benson Henderson, I'm a fan of his, the second that he wasn't competitive enough to beat an undefeated up-and-comer, he said, okay, I'm retiring, and now he's just doing fantasy matchups, such as his karate combat fight with Anthony Pettis, which I really like that matchup for him. So do you think that legends of the sport should kind of fight in different rule sets, make a wrestling match, make a boxing match, make a kickboxing match, do something a little bit different that can sell more tickets than them just fighting MMA, these up-and-comers, like a Yair Rodriguez versus BJ Penn scenario?
Yeah. I think they've earned that right. Honestly, that's how I feel about it. I don't really like it, but I think you never know what somebody's situation is financially, like BJ Penn. And you know, he might need money and he might need like a retirement purse fight. So you know, I think they've earned that option and that right, and it's okay for them to do it, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's just fucking sad. Like watching Anderson Silva go out the way he went out was kind of sad, and it's unfortunate because, like, I don't know this, but I get the feeling that, you know, throughout all of us being fighters, our age comes before our hunger fades sometimes, and those last couple fights, like, you kind of want to push it and see, like, you know, I'm old, but do I still have it like I did? You know, you want to, like, push against the inevitability of age, and we've earned that right to do it. You know, at that point in your career, when you've done all those great things, like, you've earned that right to test yourself and maybe do a couple gimmick fights, like how Nate Diaz is doing it. Like, he's just fucking doing his thing. Everybody knows Nate Diaz, but it is sad. It's hard to watch. But you know, the reason that it's sad is just because we all fear dying. We all fear inevitable age. We all fear, like, coming out of our prime and still desiring to be there.
Do people not want to stand with you?
No, nobody wants to stand with me. Billy and Hector were the only two that wanted to stand with me. And those two are kind of psychopaths.
How did that end for them?
Not well. Billy was actually doing okay. Like, he slammed me on my back. He hit a couple, like, pretty bad significant strikes for me. But as soon as I hurt him with a body shot, and as soon as he showed like a moment of weakness, I swarmed him and I did not let him out of the deep water. And for Hector, he took that fight on like 2 weeks notice. So, you know, he gets kind of a break, but, I respect him because he tried to stand with me, even though he like probably could have taken me down with some of his judo, but he just wanted to have a fun fight with me. And that was sick. But, he got knocked down several times and I stood above him and like did the thing I usually do.
Why do you find yourself flipping in the cage?
Because it's fun and it's unconventional. Like, nobody really expects it, so it's helped me get out of some gnarly positions. But I would like my last one, I was just frustrated. Like, he was just holding my arm and I just wanted to stand up, but I couldn't because he just wouldn't let go of me. So I was like, all right, motherfucker, like, try to hold me while I do this.
I heard from the commentators in your debut in the UFC that you did some sort of break signal. I couldn't find it. I was trying to find it. I don't know. Did you do a break signal? What does that look like?
I did. It was in the beginning of the third round. I looked at him and I did this.
Oh, heavy. Heavy as fuck.
Yeah. Thank you. You can see it like barely. They kind of started it late. But I think he thought that I was like signifying like a glove touch. And everybody was roasting him for saying that he like went in for a hug when I was like telling him I was going to break him.
But yeah, honestly, no, that's what I heard. So did when you did the break signal to him, what was his reaction? He didn't understand?
He just started nodding his head. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll give you a hug. Like, and I was like, that's not what I meant. But like, whatever, I'll fucking touch gloves with you. But like, yeah, I felt bad because everyone was roasting him for that. And he honestly just like misinterpreted what I was doing. But yeah.
Which opponent do you think that's ranked right now that you think that you could probably beat? I think personally, I know maybe I might get some hate for it, but even like a Adrian Yanez or a Chris Gutierrez, I think that, bro, if you get put up against those characters, I think that there's a high possibility and high probability that you could probably beat those dudes.
Yeah, I wish I could say I knew enough to like know how to beat them, but I've never even watched those two fight.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Holy shit.
I need to start watching some film. Like, I do.
Oh my fucking God. You're telling me you're in the sport and they're decently important fighters for the division that are like ranked like 12 and 13 or something. They're decent names, and you're telling me, instead of saying yeah, I can beat them, instead you're telling me I don't even know who they are.
I've heard of Adrian Yanez. I know that name, but I don't remember ever seeing him fight. But I don't know, I could pull out some other names, but they're like at the top, and that's the reason I know them. I know Mario Bautista fights at 135, right? He's from Nevada. He's from a town that's like 2 hours away from here called Winnemucca. Super small town. I think I could beat him.
You know he trains with Sean O'Malley?
Oh, really?
I think they're friends. I don't know if they train together, but on the press conference, like, Sean O'Malley constantly hypes up Mario, so I think they're friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that. I would like to train with both of them, honestly, and fight them. But he's super well-rounded, though. And he's got some fire. Like, he does not have give up in him. But I think, like, if I were to fight on my best behavior, I think I could give him a really tough fight. But I only say that because...
I'm going to say something after, so just finish your comment.
I only say that because I don't really watch many people, and he's just like one name that I know. But I probably would call out more people if I knew any better.
One fighter that I think is an absolute beast, and there's a high probability that he will get the belt. You've probably trained with him, dude. He's from Team Alpha Male. It's Song Yadong. I think him at 135 holds a belt.
Yeah, he's tough. I've sparred with him. It didn't go well, but
For you or him?
For me, I was having a bad day, and right before I tapped gloves with him, I went with this like Russian dude that fights at 170, and he like suplexed me onto the back of my head and like fucked my neck up. And then I
who's
tapped
the Russian guy?
Huh?
Who is the Russian fighter that slammed you on your head?
I don't know. He's not well known. It wasn't Miktibek that just fought. But I don't know his name. He doesn't even really speak English. But
is he in the UFC?
No. No, he's okay. A pro, and he has a good record, but he's just a big dude, like way out of my weight class, and just slammed me. But I go over to Song and tap gloves with him because he's my next guy for my next round, and I'm like, hey, like, I just fucked my neck up. I'm just going, like, super light, and I don't think he understood me because he doesn't speak good English, and he just started throwing bombs, like just snapping my head back super hard, and I was like, really, dude? Like, what the fuck? And I had, like, a calf injury, too, at the time, and he threw a super hard leg kick on that calf that I told him not to kick. And then he like took me down and yeah, it just sucked. I was like, that was my one chance to get at the number 6 ranked dude.
You want to know what I find interesting about that is we kept on talking about the fact that your chin is really good. And Song, I would argue that he's probably the single best power puncher in that division. I think he's the hardest hitter in that division. Would you agree?
Yeah, he fucking hits hard. And I think he wasn't hitting as hard as he could, but you can just tell the way he throws punches, like the way he chambers them. Like, yeah, he throws with a lot of power.
Who's your favorite fighter?
MMA fighter?
Yeah, anything. It doesn't really matter. You can pick boxing.
Max Holloway is my favorite MMA fighter. Boxing, I'd say Mike Tyson or Lomachenko. But I think Tyson takes the cake. He's just such a special human, and he's somebody that I would just love to study and put through all kinds of experiments if I could.
You've got an aggressive, really brutal style. So would you enjoy fighting in a Lethwei fight or some sort of Pride Rules fight?
Yes. Yeah, I could see myself doing one bare knuckle, you know, at the end of my career, because I would just love to see how well my body would hold up in something like that. And I think the less rules, the better. Like, if I can use all of my weapons, I would be extremely worried for my opponents. Like, if I could kick somebody in the head on the ground, oh, man, I would have no problems. No problems.
Final question. How many times have you reinvented yourself in this lifetime?
That's a great question. Nice job, Johnny. A lot of times. I'd say there's... I would say there were like three big reinventing periods. And one was like my child self before like 17, 18. One was like my early adolescence from 18 to 21. And 21 to present, I think I'm going to be this way for a long time until I transition into most likely fatherhood and forms of retirement. But I think the period from 18 to 21 was where I learned the most about myself and where I got a lot of my like stoicism and internal strength.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Peyton, for coming on the show. Is there any final remarks you want to say to the fans at home? Or if you have a message for them, if they don't know what they're doing with their life or they need some help, what do you have to say to them?
If you're my age or younger, shut your mouth. Just shut up and just like get really good at something. Use your ears more than your mouth. Later on in life, you can use your mouth more. And then if you don't know what to get good at, watch Evangelion. The anime rebuild movies, End of Evangelion, all of it. And shout out to Family First Chiropractic, as well as my gym, Reno Academy of Combat. And there's one more sponsor. Fuck, I always screw this up. Pro Bar Meals. Shout out to Pro Bar Meals and Element.
Follow Peyton on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat on Spotify. See you guys next time. Bye-bye.